Welcome to Magnet Investing Insights. We're here with Tricia Bowman and a special guest. It's Jim Rogers. And Jim, thanks so much for being with us.
I am delighted to be here with both of you. Thank you, George. Thank you, Tricia.
And so, Jim, when I introduce you as the legendary Jim Rogers, you know, you always, you know, say, hey, this and that. But I remember meeting you in the green room in Fox. It could be 20 years ago, and we went on air together, and when you started to speak, I said, whoa, I'm getting anything this guy has ever written. And so while you're humble, you are incomparable. And the reason I say you're incomparable is because a lot of people have traveled. Nobody has traveled like you have.
Well, you know, Jordan, it's because I grew up in a very small town in the backwoods of Alabama where my phone number was 5. That's not a typo. My phone number was 15. So if you grow up in a place like that, you either never leave, which is fine. A lot of my friends are still there. Or you want to see the world. I wanted to see the world. I was nuts. Still want to see the world.
Well, let's talk about one of the ways you saw him, and you chronicle it in Investment Biker, Around the World with Jim Rogers. And here you are on a motorcycle, no less, driving around the entire world. And I remember back then, you know, globalized or global investing was becoming more and more common. And I remember what you did. You said you were opening up an account at every country and basically buying every issue in every country, which was kind of, you know, unbelievable, remarkable. But what I tell people is let the investment side alone for a minute. The history lessons that you told entering each country with the currency and the regimes for like 100 or 200 years of history. I tell people, if you want to get a history lesson, forget about just an investment lesson, read Investment Biker.
Well, thank you. Yes, it was a lot of fun. And one of the great advantages for me was I was wildly curious about the world. And here I was, the world was thrown into my face. I had to learn about the world and I loved it. I loved every minute of it. You know, at one point I was held hostage for 8 days in the Congo. But even that, looking back on it, since I survived, even that was good.
Well, let me bring up one other thing too, because then you go around and invest in a venture capitalist. Then you bring your new bride with you with this custom-made Mercedes and actually began closing some accounts and you know, looking at the different regimes and how they were changing and the difference between you and me and most of other people that travel, Jim. When I enter a country, I'm not met by presidents and prime ministers. And the reason that they were hosting you is not for any other reason other than to find out what you were thinking and what you thought of their currency. So that's why they were hosting you, you know.
Well, that's flattering. I'm not sure that's accurate. I was mainly met by border guards, black marketeers, bandits, you know, a lot of strange people.
Well, you know what I learned from you, and it's really interesting. In my car today, in my glove compartment in the United States and in New Jersey, I have 4 wallets. And I remember your in your piece saying, hey, you carried extra wallets because you knew at certain places they were going to take your license, take your wallet. And you know, I have a couple dollars in each wallet. And I have like 4 wallets in my glove compartment. And that's a lesson from Jim in another book, Street Smarts. And so it's not only the markets, you know, it's the streets all around the world.
Well, you should also make sure you have some expired credit cards in that wallet. And some in those days, I had a lot of Italian lira. It looked like a lot of money. The lira was collapsing. But if there were a bandit, he thought he was getting a lot of money until he tried to spend them. Anyway, there are various and sundry tricks you learn if you want to survive.
Well, it's just, you know, it's remarkable. And again, I tried when I was young in my career, trying to read from everybody else. And again, I don't think you could really learn the markets unless you put your money in and you feel the sweat on your brow when you're losing capital. And then the fear of maybe this is up too much and maybe I should sell. So the experience, but I believe in reading as much as you can. And it leads me to the next, you know, piece I want to really talk about, because Tricia and I are working on an educational and financial literacy. And one of the books that you also have written is Gift to My Children, Father's Lessons of Life and Investing. And why don't you kind of expand on just a couple of things that you taught your young daughters or what the book was intended to do?
Well, when I first went to Wall Street, I assumed that all these older people knew what they were doing. They were educated, they were experienced, et cetera. But it didn't take me long to find out, Jordan, they didn't know anything either. They didn't know any more than I did. We were all sitting there losing money together. So I realized that if I was going to survive, I had to learn a lot. One of the first things I learned was to read as much as I could about companies, about the world, et cetera. And that helped me. It gave me a leg up. I found out that most people on Wall Street don't even read the annual report. And if you read the notes to the annual report, you've done more than everybody. So I learned early that if I did my homework, if I did my research, I would have a leg up. I still made mistakes, but it gave me a great advantage. So I hope that I can teach my children and everybody else, read as much as you can. Please read as much as you can. Some of it will be boring and useless, but some of it you won't even know will be useful. So please read as much as you can and learn as much as you can, because most of the other people don't bother. And if you do it, you will be ahead.
Well, before I turn this over to Tricia, who really is going to take over for the rest, you know, one of the things I remember you saying in the past is how much on each security you read before you invested. And it just leads me to a quick question, you know, on diversification, because if you're going to have a little bit of pennies in every little thing, you really don't even need to know much. You're just widely diversified, but you also can't have really outside returns. So my question is, in terms of diversification itself, that is Wall Street's mantra. It's my belief that they're sitting on your money to earn your fees. They don't want you to lose all the money right away. You can't really sometimes achieve your goals. So talk a little bit about diversification. And you know, I think that's the reason you knew so much about everything you were investing is you probably made some pretty concentrated bets.
Well, I have learned that diversification is basically something that brokers came up with so they don't get sued. And if they get sued, they don't lose the lawsuit. If you know, Henry Ford didn't diversify. Henry Ford put all his eggs in one basket. He was very careful about the basket. He watched the basket extremely carefully. But if you want to be successful, you have to focus. Now, you've got to be right, because if you're wrong, you're going to lose everything in a day or a week. So you've got to be right. So it just is more emphasis. Do your research, do your homework. And if you know what you're doing, then go all in. That's how you become rich, if you want to be rich. If you don't care about being rich, there are other lessons. But if you want to be rich, be sure you know what you're doing and go all in, but you better be sure you're right.
Well, on that, and you know, I know that Tricia's been talking to me about things she's been reading and watching on your end. And Tricia, why don't you take it away and see what's on Jim's mind from what you want to ask.
Well, I'm a fan of yours, Jim, as you know, and I watch all interviews that come up. Jordan has a list of financial literacy books that he recommends. And of course, your books are on it. Do you have a book or a few books that you would recommend to beginner investors, especially to read in these days and times?
Well, first, I caution people that there is no book which is going to tell you how to get rich. There are many books that say they will teach you how to get rich. You know, at one point, I was a professor at a business school, an Ivy League business school, and the students always wanted, which chapter, which page will make me rich? And I used to say to them, there is no page 37. There is no chapter 3. The only way you're going to be successful is to do a lot of work yourself. Trish, I wish there was an easy way. And if you have a book or a simple way to get rich, oh, hooray, hooray, hooray. Don't tell anybody, just get rich. No, but I have Security Analysis by Graham and Dodd bowled me over when I read it. It was explaining how to analyze investments. And I realized, oh my gosh, these guys know what they're doing. And so I tried to do as much of that kind of analysis as I could. But Trish, I've made many mistakes. Oh my gosh, you want to talk about mistakes? We can be here all day. You want to hear about my first wife? Oh my God, what a mistake. What a mistake that was. But I made many mistakes.
And that's one thing about you, of you're like, find the thing, do your research, the thing that people are ignoring that can have a positive impact and cheap, right? And so it's almost like you keep that outlook of, oh, I'm just going to look around and find the next thing, instead of being attached to what you've done that hasn't worked in the past or isn't working now.
Well, if you find something that's cheap, it doesn't mean you should invest in it. There's got to be a reason to invest in it. There may be a reason it's cheap, because it's useless, it's hopeless. But if you can find something that's cheap, where there is positive change taking place, you're probably going to be extremely successful. And since I was lazy, I like to find things with positive change that were going to last for a long time, because I'm a hopeless trader and trading is work. But if I could find something that I could own for a long, long time, Trish, oh gosh, I was in heaven. I would buy it, and then I had to maintain it, of course. I had to watch it carefully to make sure that the positive change continued. Trish, I wish this were easy. I wish it were easy to get rich. Wouldn't it be wonderful if this were easy? Oh my gosh, it was never easy for me.
I've watched your videos lately, and you've been talking about, like, it's inevitable that there's going to be a crash come that one you've never seen before. It's be prepared. What advice would you give a beginner investor how to become prepared right now?
Well, I just want to explain that. You did a good job, but I want to make sure I clarify. We've always had crashes, recessions, bear markets throughout history. There's no country in the world, there's no period in history where we have been immune to bear markets. So I know we're always going to have bear markets. We had a bear market in 2008 because of so much debt. Trish, since 2009, the debt everywhere has skyrocketed. So it seems to me a simple fact that the next bear market has to be horrible, has to be the worst in my lifetime, because the debt has skyrocketed, not just in the US, everywhere. I mean, everybody has big debts now. So it seems to me a simple fact that the next bear, and we are going to have another bear market. If you meet somebody who tells you we're not going to have bear markets, you should leave the room. Call me. Leave the room and call me quickly, because we are going to have more bear markets. And sometimes they've been horrible. Sometimes they have been not so horrible. But the next one, because there's so much debt everywhere, I mean, even China has a lot of debt now. China didn't have any debt 25 years ago. Nobody would lend money to the communists. But now even China has a lot of debt. So, Trish, the next bear market has to be the worst in my lifetime. And I can tell that I'm older than you, so it's going to be the worst in your lifetime, too. Be worried. Be careful.
So how would someone become prepared that, like, you're in a short stock, you and Jordan are sophisticated investors. A beginner investor that's just trying, how can they become more prepared for it?
Well, the first and the most basic preparation is don't invest in something that you don't know about. Don't listen to somebody on the television or the internet or in the newspaper. Just stay with what you yourself know. Everybody watching this knows a lot about something, whether it's fashion or sports or cars or whatever. If you stay with what you know, then if things go right, you know what to do. If things go wrong, you know what to do. But if I told you to buy X and you bought X and it went up, you wouldn't know what to do. You don't know why you bought it. If it went down, well, if it went down, you'd blame me. You said that's because of Jim Rogers. But if it goes down, you don't know what to do. So please, if you want to be successful, stay with what you know. Now, there's some people, when I tell them that, who say, well, that's boring. My answer to that is be boring. If you want to be a successful investor, for goodness sakes, be boring. I'm sure everybody thought Thomas Edison was boring with all of his talk about electricity and telephones and things. Fine. Be boring and you'll be successful.
You mentioned reading annual reports and the footnotes. Do you read on companies all the 10-Ks and then the quarterly 10-Qs?
Well, yes, I'm a little bit lazier now, Trish, than I was before, so I don't do as much as I did before. But yes, if you want to be successful, read all of that stuff. Some of it is useless and a waste. But if you find the nugget, if you find the gem that's the key to being successful, you're way ahead of the crowd, because I promise you, other people are not going to read the 10-Ks. Other people, and they're certainly not going to read the notes to the 10-K.
What would you look for in a 10-K, or what do you look for in a 10-K?
Well, the main thing I'm looking for is something that indicates that it's very cheap. But if you want I always look for is something that's changing. Something that's changing that is going to lead to success, whatever it is, you know. Once upon a time, the price of oil was very cheap, and it was so cheap, Trish, that oil people would burn excess natural gas because it was so cheap they couldn't make any money. Well, eventually, though, everybody flaring, it was called flaring in those days, if you flare all the natural gas, the world runs out of natural gas. And so the price of natural gas has to go up. Now, if you're sitting there and alert and attentive and you see, now this stuff that they've been flaring, that they're burning because it's a waste, is now becoming very valuable because they can. And I'll tell you how I first saw that. I was reading a 10K, a prospectus for an oil, a gas pipeline company, and they talked in there, because they had to disclose everything, that they were running out of supplies of natural gas. They couldn't fill their pipelines. Now, I said to me, strangely enough, oh my gosh, that means if a gas pipeline company cannot get enough gas to run its pipelines, something is going to change. This stuff that people burn because it's a waste is becoming very valuable, because here are gas pipeline companies that don't have enough gas. Now, simple things like that might lead to good investment opportunities.
And if it has a going concern in the audit report, it's probably not a company you want to be investing in.
Well, you can find positive things and negative things. I'm glad you pointed that out. Yeah. You can find things that will make you want to sell the stock or sell the stock short. It's amazing what you can learn if you're attentive and if you bother to read.
Are you bullish on anything currently?
Well, not too much. If you look around, Trish, many stock markets are at or near all-time highs. Mm-hmm. That has rarely been a time to be excited about investing unless you're a short seller, and I'm not selling short at the moment. Mm-hmm. I don't see anything. I mean, the Uzbekistan market is cheap and changing, but I don't see many investment markets. Agriculture is cheap, yes. Agriculture in much of the world, but I don't see much right now. If you and Jordan know something that's cheap, don't say it out loud. Send me an email. Send me a private email, because I'm looking.
No hot tips, right, Jim? No hot tips.
If you use hot tips, you're going to go broke. Please. I hope when you teach people, Trish, you teach them, do not listen to hot tips. Avoid hot tips. Hot tips will ruin you.
Yes.
I mean, well, Jim,
let me just kind of bring up something and expand on something you said, because I think that, you know, sometimes right now people think that everybody should get rich on the same stock that everyone's talking about. And it's almost insane when you have a little of experience and you realize that the more people are talking about one thing, probably it's that time to avoid it. But what you brought up, which I love, is this concept of cheap with a catalyst. Because unless there's a catalyst, things can stay inexpensive or cheap forever and ever. And just maybe there's a reason for it, because when buggy whips got cheap and the automobile came around, it wasn't really a great idea to pile it into buggy whip makers. But this concept of the catalyst is what intrigues me about, you know, your comment a minute ago.
Well, yes, you've learned the basic lessons. See, Trish, he's a good teacher. Get him to speak at your classes. I'm going to say it's that simple. Nothing is simple. But that's a basic lesson that people should learn. You have to have a catalyst. You have something that's changing, either positively or negative. And if you can figure out the change, you might be successful.
Right. I want to ask you another thing, Jim. And this is the part that I think is probably the single biggest paradigm that I can't figure out yet, right, is that the momentum people and the chart people say the trend is your friend until the end. And then occasionally a company shows up, and I don't even want to mention any of today's names. But what we've seen is that it was RCA, it was Xerox, it was AOL, it was, you know, any given decade you go in, these companies literally looked invincible and unstoppable because they were the leaders in what was growing. And a lot of them don't even have a bid anymore. And so this is the parallel. They say long-term investing, buy it and put it away. But I'm a believer that most stocks, like even Sequoia trees, they die eventually. And it's this paradox between being a long-term investor and then my belief that almost every stock ends up becoming a dust pile. And you know, what am I getting wrong, or how should I think of it, you know, a little bit better?
Well, no, that's a very important lesson that we all need to learn. You can go back over any market over the last 200 or 300 years. There's always been something that has been unbelievably hot, exciting, going to last forever. I can remember I remember railroads once upon a time were wildly exciting and popular, and railroad stocks just could not go down. Well, you know, since then, railroad stocks have never sold that high in history. We still have railroads. Yeah, still have railroads. But you mentioned radio, RCA. Radio Corp of America in 1929 was on everybody's lips. The stock could not go down until it collapsed, of course, in the big bear market. But there's always something. Xerox, I can remember when Xerox, oh my God, you could never get enough Xerox. But go back in history, every bull market, there's been something that everybody wanted to talk about. You would go to the dentist and the receptionist wanted to talk to you about whatever it was. So this is, there's nothing new about this, as both of you well know. You just have to be, first of all, I hope we're all attentive enough to see right now there are these seven stocks that everybody has to own. Well, I mean, I've seen this before. It's not my first rodeo. In every bull market, there's something that everybody has to own. And if you look at them two or three markets later, nobody even heard of them.
So my question to you is, because I know that you focus on fundamentals and not charts, and you're saying, you know, that you're not really shorting right now, even though it seems like a game of musical chairs where the music's getting louder and louder and they're taking more and more chairs away. Something's going to happen that's going to, you're going to say, enough, now I'd like to short. So is there a catalyst? Is it a chart, or is it the temperature starting to change? What is it that when you say enough is enough, I'm stepping in and I'm going to begin to short? What is that catalyst that helps you step in on the way down?
Well, Jordan, I wish this were easy. I wish all I had to do was look on page 37 and find the answer to your question. No, in my case, and I will not get it right, exactly right, but I hope I get it close enough. A fever develops in the market. When you pick up the newspaper, it's everywhere, whatever it is, or TV, the internet, whatever, you can sense lots of new investors who are very excited about how easy it is to make money and how much money they can make in this new thing called the stock market. I mean, the fever has always happened for hundreds of years, and it will happen again. And I hope it's a sense that I will be able to sense the mood of the investing world to know that the fever is hot, hot, hot. But the reason I'm not shorting now, Jordan, is because usually at the end of a bull market, the fever gets really, really, really hot. And you have a blow off, what I call a blow off.
Right.
Where everything just goes up all the time. And the blow off is wonderful if you're long, but it's, you better get out, because no blow off lasts very long and it usually ends very badly. But Jordan, I don't have an answer. If you know page 37, tell me the book. I'll read the whole book.
I'm looking for page 37, and I probably will to the day I die. It's a big puzzle, you know, without an answer. And, you know, we're sitting here, Trish, you know, at the feet of a legend right now. And mm-hmm. All I know is that this, I feel a fever right now. And I'm not saying this is a top. And Jim, I am long things that most people never heard of. And what's on the tip of everyone's tongue is not in my account or the, you know, the fund that I manage. And people say, well, why not? And I say, it's just, I can't invest in what everybody's talking about. Even if the chart is strong and even if the prospects are good, there's just too many people talking about the same thing. And it almost forbids me, you know, owning that. I look dumb in, at that time frame. And, you know, hopefully when the music does stop, I'm in a chair, and I'm in a chair right next to you and Tricia.
Well, Trish, you just heard a good lesson. Every word Jordan just said. And ask him to borrow the book.
Just appreciative of you, Jim, sharing your insights with all of us. And like the books you've written, you can, like, even going around the world on a motorcycle, you didn't do that so you could write a book. It's almost like everything that you share it's like, oh, this worked for me. And then you write a book about it to help others. And so I just see you as someone that shares insights, and I'm very appreciative of you and to know you.
Well, thank you, Trish. I'm flattered. Where are you? Where are you located? Where are you standing? Where are you sitting right now, both of you? I'm in Singapore. Where are you, Jordan?
I'm in North Central Jersey, in a little town with no parking meters called Chester, New Jersey.
Hooray. And Trish, where are you?
I'm in Del Mar, California.
Oh, my gosh. Well, aren't we international?
Oh, we are.
New Jersey, Singapore. Hey,
yeah, so live from Singapore, it's Jim. And Jim, before we hop off, and I know we've taken a lot of your time, and we got the investment, you know, nuggets from you that I was hoping for, but I tell a story that you told in your book, which I just want you to recount, because there's not a handful of people in the world that experienced it. And when you talked about being in the middle of a desert, the desert, Sahara, with your new bride, and you go to sleep, and you wake up to what?
Well, there are many things, but I guess the evening you're speaking about, we went to sleep, and we woke up because there was a lot of noise, and it turned out that there was a herd of camels surrounding us because the shepherds, I guess they're called shepherds, the people were moving their camels in the desert, looking for water, whatever you look for when you have camels in the Sahara Desert. There was this whole, I mean, there was something like 50 or 60 camels surrounding us. Not ominous, it wasn't scary or anything, but there were the camels and the shepherds, and they were all wandering around, and they were looking at us like, who are these crazy people? Who are these strange people on these strange motorcycles? Oh, my God. It was most interesting. So if you drive around the world, please at least spend one night in the Sahara Desert looking for camels.
It's amazing adventures. And Jim, I hope you just keep traveling. If you ever do get back to the New York area occasionally, you know, on business, what have you, I hope we cross paths again, because literally there's nothing you've written that I haven't read. And probably there's nothing you're going to say that I wouldn't want to hear. So I love to learn from the masters. And as humble as you are a legend, and you are incomparable.
Well, I'm very flattered. And Trish, if I get to California, we'll do the same thing, okay?
Absolutely.
But I just want to remind you. And by the way, if you get to Singapore, you know, I'd never been to Singapore when I was a young person. And even then, the first time I walked out of Singapore and said, what a waste of a place. I was wrong, of course. I didn't realize what was happening. But there are many places in the world that we should all visit, that we all can learn for. So even California, Trish, even in California, you can learn something. So I hope that I see all of us together sometimes, and we will drink beer or whatever. We'll find good investments.
Look forward to it. Trish, I'll wrap it up for us. We'll let Jim go. He's already got a morning ahead of him. It's Jordan Kimmel and Trisha Bowman with Jim Rogers, Magnet Investing Insights. And Jim, thanks so much for the time once again.
Thank you, Jim.
I am flattered. Thank you. You're always fun.